happiest living in a cheap hotel.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us. 251-343-0106. A couple of texts to get to before the conclusion of the program. So keep them coming, guys. Cut up. No show on Monday. You get a reprieve from the Jeff Porch Show. Probably more importantly, you get a reprieve from Dale Jackson. I think it was David who brought that up. But anyway, enough of that. Joining us now, time for... We do this every Friday about this time. Our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott, joins us on the line. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Man, I am doing great. The rain has finally cleared here for a little while, and sun's out. Life is good, and boy, what a week, Jeff.
Yeah, well, what a 2 weeks, right? We started out 2 weeks ago. It was Election Day, and then we get a Supreme Court decisions, and then we go through this Senate 27 drama, and now here it is. It's finally Friday, and time to go shoot off some fireworks somewhere, right?
Exactly right.
Well, let me kick this off, and this has come up a little bit. You guys passed the bathroom bill in the legislature, and it essentially says if you you have to, in a public school setting, you must use the restroom of your biological gender. None of this, I'm going to decide I'm going to be a girl today and go to the girls' bathroom. None of that anymore. And, of course, it drew outrage for the Biden administration, specifically Alabama. Jen Psaki, who was press secretary at the time, called out the Alabama legislature and threatened action. Well, USDA senator has put out some kind of directive or memo saying you don't want to mess around with this stuff. If you start doing that, well, we're going to look at taking away funding for your school lunches. Are you aware of this? What do you think of that kind of punitive action from the Biden administration based on stuff that y'all voted on last session?
Well, I think it's obviously pretty disappointing to hear that coming from the White House. I mean, how absurd can you possibly get? Right? We don't like your law that says if you're a boy, you use a boy's bathroom, you're a girl, you use a girl's bathroom. And therefore, we're going to cut off funding for feeding needy children. Wow,
And they're trying to make it a Title IX thing. They say, well, this is their interpretation of it, that it's gender or sex-based discrimination that's going on here. I don't think this stands up in a court of law at all, but it is something that y'all are going to maybe have to deal with, or at least some of the attorney general or somebody's going to have to deal with.
Well, I think so. And I think with this, with this Supreme Court, the writing's on the wall for something like that. You can't act like that. I'm glad that we have the justices that we have that can take this type of politicization of school lunches and feeding needy children and turn that into some, transgender, issue is just positively absurd. But it really shows, in my opinion, where the left is. It highlights where the left is on issues like this and why it's so important to get out and vote in November.
Yeah, I think you do it this way. I mean, you try to incentivize it. You don't try to take punitive action if you want to influence the behavior of the states because I don't know, but Jeff Porter's not running the administration right now. Senator, let's move on to the other big story of the day. You were watching this one real close, but your colleague, Senator Whatley, bowing out of his challenge in a disputed Senate District 27 race. And it was a good ride. He had been there since 2010. He's part of that wave, the storming the state house wave in 2010. Jay Hovey is the apparent nominee for the Republican Party now. Al Gop just put out a statement saying as much. What do you make of that? And how do you think this is going to shake up the Senate?
Well, first, Senator Whatley is my friend, and what a stand up way to exit, right? He's a retired colonel from the National Guard. He fought this until the end, and then when the writing was on the wall, he made what I would say is the honorable decision to protect the party as much as possible, to ensure that there is a Republican elected from District 27 in November, and to prevent any any more angst within the party. And that is an honorable thing to do. He's a good man. He has served his district and the state well. Very powerful individual in the Senate as the judiciary chairman, and just a heck of a nice guy on top of all of that. So, I'm going to miss him, tremendously. He's still going to be one of those people that you find me and others reaching out to, and hoping he'll take our call so we can, ask him for his advice on legislation. But a good man, a good Republican, and a great colleague. He'll be missed. We will welcome, Senator Hovey, after his election in November, which I expect to happen. He'll be part of the caucus, and we'll work with him just as we would have with Senator Whatley. I will say, Jeff, it's worth saying that that this issue and this particular race has certainly underscored the need to look at primary elections in Alabama and elections in Alabama and how they're conducted as a whole. First with Democrat crossover voting, that was blatant, organized, and effective. And then, of course, the administration of elections and voter registration and district lines are something we're going to have to look at as well, because there were problems, and those problems were statewide.
Well, that was good. That was where I was going to take it, number one, the crossover votes. I don't think there's any question here. And I just kind of riffed on Auburn becoming more of a blue place. I mean, maybe not blue, but not as bright red as it had been when I was growing up. At least as far as the student body goes, obviously Democrats were in charge in the 90s and up until 2010 there, but the conservative, I guess, it's not as conservative as it used to be. And that's a place where if Democrats really wanted to and they could get organized, they could cross over and impact Republican Party politics. And I think that's true in a lot of different places in this state. As we become more of a one-party state, we got to, as Republicans, kind of consider that, right?
Well, I think so. And as a member of the Republican Party Executive Committee, State Republican Party Executive Committee now, I think it's incumbent on the party to look really hard, especially again at this particular race, and say, hey, look, this happened. This is occurring. We are seeing organized efforts by Democrats to influence our, you know, primary. And should Democrats be allowed to vote in a Republican primary? That's the fundamental question we need to ask. And it's never been as big an issue and as blatant and as impactful, I think, as it was this time around. You had an awful lot of that going on with Paul Hubbard and AEA when Bradley Byrne ran for governor in 10. I think there was a lot of crossover there. There was some legislation taken up that said, hey, if you voted this way in the primary and the runoff, you had to vote in the same, you know, in the same the party. And I think that was a step in the right direction. But things continue to evolve. We continue to become more and more and more of a one-party state. And we continue to see elections swung in the Republican Party by Democrats clearly out to influence who the Republican Party nominee is. And I think we probably need to make adjustments there.
Well, here's the next question, and it keeps coming up. And we had three close election contests back-to-back-to-back. Not back-to-back-to-back, but they were all in this cycle. House District 2, Lauderdale, Limestone County, Etowah County, a couple of 16 and 17 there, those House districts. And then obviously this 27 Senate district race. Well, guess what? It turns out we discovered upon further examination that people were given ballots and to vote in races and districts that they did not live in, that they weren't supposed to be voting in. I've been told that that was just a one-off in Etowah County. Turned out it was a two-off, now a three-off. I expect it is much more widespread than that. How do you get to the bottom of it? What needs to be done? Can the legislature even start considering maybe we need to look at a different way to have a board of registrars that's responsible for this rather than these just kind of random appointments done by the ag commissioner, the auditor, and the governor?
Well, let's take that in pieces. First of all, I am convinced that this was not a one-off or two-off or three-off. I think this happened over and over and over again. I know that I had a House candidate in Baldwin County call me the day of the election and say, there's a problem. People, my supporters that live in my district have gone to the polls and my name's not on the ballot that they got. And I, you know, I called the probate judge very, very early that morning and he you know, made him aware of the situation, and he went down there and they fixed it, and those people were able to vote the correct race. But, those issues, I think, probably went on without people knowing, you know, especially after redistricting. Oh, maybe they changed my district. They didn't know to call, or whatever. The frustrating part is that this redistricting was done in a manner that, in my mind, was easier than any other in recent history. And it was done by entire precinct. So by and large, each precinct is a defined geographic area with a defined number of people in it. And when we redistricted, we took that entire precinct and cobbled those together. And then in just one precinct, we used the fraction to make up the difference to get within the 5% required. But those precinct lines are what have been used forever, and that's where people are designated to go vote, right? It's this particular church or that particular community center that is assigned to that particular precinct. So this should have been very easy to get right, and yet it seems the state, the registrars, got it wrong over and over and over again. And we've got to figure out how to deal with that. The last part of your question, you know, to your point about what does the legislature do? Do we need to change how these appointments are made? Maybe so. And maybe some increased involvement by the Secretary of State, maybe some increased training to ensure that these registrars, who all too often are, I mean, they're political appointees, but their job is very, very serious. It's very, very important. You don't see it until election day, but it matters. And we've seen in this past election that it can have serious, serious consequences in close elections.
And I don't know if you've been listening to my show today or the last few days, since this has become an issue, Senator. It just seems to me Alabama's always had a target on it. We're atoning for the sins of the past of this state, and we should be had to atone for them. But that being said, there's no margin of error here, right? For error, we have to get it right. We have to get it right every time because, you know, when Eric Holder comes calling or the Southern Poverty Law Center or the ACLU or whatever, and they want to make an issue about Alabama, whether they should or should not have control of their own destiny when it comes to elections, all they got to do is say, oh, yeah, look what happened to Lee County. Look what happened to Etowah County. Look what happened to Lauderdale County. Look what happened to probably any other county in the state. They can't get that right. Why should we think that they should have more autonomy in determining how their elections are done? And if that becomes problematic, that we absolutely have to make sure we do a better job at getting this stuff right.
You're correct. And look, you know, everything is not perfect. Problems happen. Issues happen. I think they've been more impactful in determining outcomes here in this last election cycle in these House races and, yes, the Senate race here. But these issues are serious, and we need to admit when there's a problem. That's the first step, right? Let's admit there's an issue and not try to hide it, and let's go and investigate and figure out what went wrong and figure out how to keep it from happening again. Because you're exactly right. It undermines the credibility of our election process if we continue to see these types of issues.
Yeah, I just we've been hearing from and I love Secretary of State John Merrill for the last 7.5 years it's been just about how great our election integrity is, and you know, especially after 2020, at least we're not Georgia. But to me, it's more disappointing, I guess, because I really thought there's one thing in government that we do right, and it's elections, but apparently not.
Well, you can have all the ballot security in the world, but if you don't have the right ballot when you go to vote, it kind of throws that out, right? You can have all the voter registration, that you want to have out there. You know, John Merrill can come to your house and give you a non-voter ID card, but if you have the DMV, you know, screwing up when they're supposed to be registered or people think they're registering, that's not good either. We've got to figure out where were their problems. Use these issues as opportunities to identify problem areas. Don't get political about them. Just say, hey, there was an issue here. Let's look at it and let's fix it.
Last question, we'll get you out of here on this. ITED bridge plan, have you a chance to review it? What do you think? I don't know. Maybe there's a little sticker shock, but that seems to be waning by the moment. What do you make of it?
Look, it definitely gets the most improved award. I mean, we've gone from this $6 toll down to, you know, a $2.50. There's now a cap of $40 a month if you get this, which is less than a dollar a trip for daily commuters. All of that's getting down into the much more reasonable range. I'm still amazed at the amount of the cost of this project. It is exorbitant. The I-10 bridge over going over the Lake Pontchartrain into New Orleans was about $895 million. And that's a huge elevated bridge deck that goes on for 6-7 miles, one of the longest in the country. And to think that we're about to spend 2.7 on something, it's unbelievable. And I think we need to look continuously at cost savings on that project. I'm also concerned that this project depends really from a funding standpoint on a $500 million mega grant from the feds. I think that the likelihood of that, well, there's some likelihood, and I certainly think the feds should invest that money here. I think that's a big chunk of money depending on the Biden administration right now. I'm not sure we can count on that. And then lastly, I think no matter what the toll, is that is proposed, that Alabamians shouldn't have to pay that toll, that Alabamians that are investing hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars on the front end should not have to pay when they've already made an investment like that. And I'll continue to look at legislation to try to make sure we offset any toll that is charged to Alabamians.
Senator, got to leave it there. Very informative, but we'll talk again next week.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend and happy 4th of July.
Say same to you, sir. All right, guys, we'll get one more break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5.
Dixieland alike. We tell stories about what goes on in Montgomery at midnight. Because music roll ain't only in Tennessee. So won't you bury me in Dixie?